Well, what we generally have to do, at least one thing that we can do, a very important thing we can do, is to retrace our steps, to go back to fundamentals. If we are mentally confused, for instance, and there's a great deal of mental confusion around these days, one finds it in the newspapers, and well, one hears it on the radio, and I'm sure if one watched TV, which I don't, I'm glad to say, you'd probably find lots and lots of it there. You'd find mental confusion, of course, in some of the books you read, and even some of the Buddhists you meet, even some of the Buddhist teachers you meet, you find mental confusion. So if we're mentally confused, as we very often are, as we usually are, when we're not making spiritual progress, we have to go back to meditation. That may seem a very dull, a very prosaic sort of remedy, back to the old cushion, back to the old mindfulness of breathing, back to the old metta bhavana, back to shamatha bhavana, in other ways. But that's what we have to do. If we're mentally confused, if we're not able to develop wisdom and in that way make real spiritual progress, we have to go back to meditation, back to shamatha bhavana, because as the Buddha said, it is the concentrated mind that sees things as they really are, not the unconcentrated mind. It's the concentrated mind that develops prajna. But suppose our meditation is unsatisfactory. Suppose we don't have too much time for it, or suppose we're troubled by all sorts of wandering thoughts, distractions, what happened yesterday, what I've got to do tomorrow, all that sort of thing, with which I'm sure you're only too familiar. So if we find meditation difficult, if we can't concentrate, we have to get back to sila or ethics. We have to practice the precepts more carefully and more vigorously, because an ethical life is an integrated life. And the more integrated we are, the easier we shall find it to achieve mental concentration. It's no use leading an ethically unintegrated life, and on top of that, in despite of that, almost trying to achieve mental concentration, trying to meditate. But suppose our practice of ethics is not very successful, supposing we find it very difficult not to be cruel, maybe we do sometimes take something we haven't been given. And as for that third precept, I'd better not say anything about that. And what about speech? I mean, I sometimes say that, this is the easiest precept of all to break. The precept according to which we should abstain from not just false speech, but harsh speech, speech which divides people, and just useless talk. Well, I'm afraid most of us have to admit that we break this precept many, many times a day, perhaps. I sometimes say it is really the most difficult precept to take. You're very unlikely to kill anybody in the course of the day, or actually to steal anything in the course of the day. You don't usually rob a bank in the course of the day, and you're not very likely to commit adultery in the course of the day, but you're almost certain to infringe the speech precepts. So one needs to watch that. And of course there's that fifth precept, which is of course a matter of some controversy, whether the fifth precept requires total abstention or just not taking too much. Well, those are just the five precepts. There are other sets of precepts. There are the ten precepts, the ten akusala dharmas. So supposing we do find even the practice of ethics in a flawless way difficult, what shall we do then? Is it possible to go back to something even more fundamental? Well, it is, fortunately. If we find even the practice of sila, ethics, difficult, well, we should just practice dana or giving. At the very least, we can do that. And through dana, through giving, in all sorts of ways, we learn to empathize with other people. And we can therefore say that imaginative identification with other people, with other living beings, in fact, is the foundation of ethics. And in this way, we get back to the path of regular steps. We start making progress again. And this is what Atisha did. This is what Atisha did. He retraced his steps from the Vajrayana through the Mahayana, and from the Mahayana through the Hinayana. And at the age of 29, he became a monk. Gave up all his tantric rituals, tantric paraphernalia, and Ganachakras, tantric feasts. He became a monk. We're told he became a monk in the Mahasanghika branch of the Sangha, of the monastic order. It's not clear where he was ordained or under whom, but apparently he was ordained at one of the great monastic universities of northeast India. And thereafter he spent 2 years studying. He studied the Tripitaka and the Mahavipassana. He studied the Tripitaka in the sense of studying the Vinaya, and as far as we know, the Agamas, which are the Sanskrit counterparts of the Pali Nikayas. And he studied the Mahavipassana, which is a great commentary of the Sarvastivadins on the seventh and last book, the Jnana Prasthana, of the Sarvastivadin Abhidharma Pitaka. These, of course, were Hinayana works. But even that didn't satisfy him. He wanted to study the great classical Mahayana works. But strange to say, he couldn't find any teachers. There were some important texts, but others were simply no longer available in India, at least in that part of India.